Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome back to News and Views. There are a lot of ways to describe the almost six-month-long General Assembly session that ended 2 weeks ago. Former Representative Rick Glaser, now head of the North Carolina Justice Center, says it was marked by missed opportunities. Glaser joins us now to talk about it. Well, Rick, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Chris, very much.
We've had a little time to let the dust settle from the General Assembly session. I was going to ask you some specific questions about it, but when you think now about this, I guess it's formally not over, but the 2017 session as it stands now, what are your thoughts?
We finished session A of the session because we've got sessions B and C coming up, but I think it was a session of a lot of missed opportunities. Missed opportunities to make headway on inequalities in the state, missed opportunities to improve in public education in the state. I think missed opportunities to try to create better dialogue and a relationship between the legislature and the governor, missed opportunities in trying to think through and actually take some time to figure out what might be coming down from the federal government and plan for it. I think it will go down in all of those categories, and I think it will go down as a session that did some damage, but on the bigger side, did very little repair.
I want to get into the budget and some other things, but you mentioned the governor. That it felt like the stage was set for the session really before it began in December, when there was a special session attacking Governor Cooper's powers, and that seemed to last throughout the year.
It did in every way, and I think that there's no question that the legislative session really was an attack on both the executive power and the judicial power, both of which now are the sort of checks and balances, right, on a runaway legislature, and the legislature decided that there is only one branch of government. And they were going to make that clear in limiting the scope, the power, and the ability of either of the other branches to do their jobs.
The budget is the big job of a General Assembly, especially in long sessions. What did you make of the final budget document?
Yeah, again, as I said, I think earlier, it's a missed opportunity. I think also a really bad continuation of really poor economic and tax policy. It is a budget that fails to invest in the state very significantly and continues this pattern, and again, a much more the House conceding to the Senate, of cutting corporate income tax, cutting the tax rate, all of which would be fine if you were one of the higher tax rates in the country and you were trying to make yourself more competitive. Someday someone will have to explain to me the reality of what happens when you have the lowest corporate tax rate and you still cut it, and exactly who are you thinking you're getting with that? But at the same time, losing that capacity and that investment and that investing in public services and public institutions, whether those are law enforcement, the court system, health and human services for us all, public education, the university system. And so after years and years of cutting, most states, when they came out of the recession, started to reinvest as fast as they could in the institutions that moved their state forward. We certainly cut our way through the recession, but we've never gone back to reinvest. And this theory that exists out there that somehow these cuts will lead to economic development, that all of the money that people save and businesses, they're going to reinvest in their business, has never borne out in any economic study. It's a failed economic theory that is nearly bankrupt Kansas and several other states. And unfortunately, we continue on that same path.
Yeah, there was the Fiscal Research Division just released a report saying we can expect a shortfall of $1.2 billion in 2 years, $1.4 billion the year after that. And legislative leaders say that won't happen.
Clearly, it's the same legislative leaders that passed a bill a few years ago that said the sea will never rise.
It's interesting that they would ignore the advice of their own nonpartisan staff.
And the nonpartisan staff, on top of which, has always been pretty accurate, number one, and number two, very conservative in their economic projections. It is ideology trumping data, ideology trumping science in the other case, and I think not unhealthy. It is one thing to experiment and to change and to try something, and government should be willing to do that. But when that experiment that you're looking at has been tested repeatedly in other models and economic scenarios and other institutions and failed each time, at some point you have to learn the lesson and say, maybe my ideology here is wrong. Maybe what I thought just isn't how it's going to work out. There's enough data and enough experiential information to know that what they're embarking on is not going to lead to future investment in the state. It's not going to lead to a future economic progress. It isn't an incentive that's going to bring additional businesses here or the creation of jobs here. But what it will do is clearly limit the resources and capacity of the state to expand our infrastructure.
Let's shift to public education. You spent a lot of your legislative career and even before that working on improving public schools. This session, lawmakers increased funding for vouchers, created education savings accounts. It still seems like we're moving toward privatizing our education system.
Yeah, I think very fast. When I was in the legislature, I was not a conspiratorial theorist of any type. And, you know, I recognize that there is a broad range of what people feel is the best combination of options for education of children. But I've come to the conclusion, and sadly, that there is really a theory behind this. And it is a theory that we are looking at an ideological practice in the General Assembly of North Carolina, whose goal it is to diminish the public institution of public education, starve it from the resources it needs to actually improve or to make the gains that our children deserve, to turn around then and say, look, I told you that public education isn't doing the job, so come with us on the private journey. And I think it is trying to create the story, fulfilling its own prophecy that it creates by its actions. I think that's a sad state of affairs because there's only one institution in the nation that's bonded our people together as one nation under one common set of values, and that's been public education. I think that this session is just a classic example of lots of money being poured into choice options, into voucher options, and hardly any being put back into public schools from which several billion dollars was taken over the last five sessions. It is hard to understand that philosophy when 90% of your students still go to public schools. And I think the other thing that is out there from the public is all of the taxpayer money that goes into public schools, whether we like it or not, in terms of the outcome, is accountable. We test everything. We look at all of the data, and we can see when schools are failing. We may not have been as responsive as a state when they have, but that's a whole different story than pouring hundreds of millions of dollars now into the private sector with no transparency, no accountability. And then when you get some sense of data that's showing that those students are not doing as well as students in public school, throwing the data and saying, oh, well, the data must be wrong.
I'm sure you've heard the arguments from the other side saying, well, they have actually increased funding for education. They've giving teachers a pay raise. They keep claiming that they are supporting public schools.
Well, it all depends on your definition, doesn't it? But there is some truth, right, to the fact that additional money has been put in. Of course, if you fail to look at what's been taken out and netting it, or if you fail to look at it over time, that it changes the scenario. For example, there was teacher raises this year. They weren't what the legislature said they were. They were not nearly what the governor projected they were. But just as a simple sort of exercise, if you are looking and saying, I'm putting in money and paying teachers, and you're saying I'm basing it on anticipated teachers who are going to be there, you get one set of figures because that's based on all the teachers who exist this year. But we know that there are plenty of teachers who retire each year, and they're replaced by teachers who are much younger and paid much less. But if you fail to take that into account and look at that, it's skewing the data. The governor, in fact, had a plan that would have given teachers across the board a significantly higher raise, moved us closer, inched us closer to the national average. And it's not just teacher pay, right? It's been everything. It's been elimination of mentoring programs, elimination of professional development programs, which have just started to be put back, elimination of teaching fellows programs. We've put a teaching fellow loan program back in after we cut a nationally renowned teaching fellow scholarship. We've put the loan program back in for only STEM teachers and special ed teachers. Do people not think we need foreign language teachers in a global economy? Do people not think that we need people to teach reading in third grade? They've eliminated the capacity of teachers, future teachers, for career status. They've now eliminated the capacity in a few years for them to get health benefits when they retire. All of that adds up in a way that if you're a teacher and graduating from a teacher college in Pennsylvania, do you really want to come to North Carolina, or are you going to choose Virginia or Pennsylvania or another state that actually values its teachers at all levels? We have a long way to go to catch up to where this state was under Jim Hunt, and for that matter, in the beginning stages under Mike Easley before the recession. You know, I always said that kids will learn if they have a competent, caring, dedicated professional in front of the classroom, and they won't if they don't. And we continue to not invest in our people and therefore create more hardship for our kids.
Two other quick things, and we're running out of time. One is let's hit one positive thing, which is it does seem to be there's a growing consensus about changing the criminal justice system for young folks, both with raise the age, with expunction. That's one area that agreement seems to be possible.
Goes to show you what bipartisanship and good ideas can do. And as you know, Bill Rowe and Daniel Bose, Mia Walker from the Justice Center were one of the lead organizations in creating a far expanded expunction capacity so that someone who commits a low-level felony or a misdemeanor when they're 17 isn't barred from jobs when they're 37 on them. So we've been able to create a really good capacity bill that will help more North Carolinians get jobs and erase the one thing they did with that's barring them from years ago. Second thing we were able to do right is finally join the rest of the country in raising the age of juveniles from 16 to 18, becoming the last state in the union to do that. So we've helped our kids out there. And I think it is an area where there is some real serious bipartisan consensus, and we should be proud of those achievements.
Finally, as we sit here, you mentioned the federal government and the uncertainty. We have a president who's proposed a budget which would devastate North Carolina and many other states, and a health care bill, some version of which we'll see soon, which will take health care away from millions of people across the country, including in North Carolina. What should lawmakers have done, given what's happened in Washington?
Well, I think a couple things. One, to plan conservatively, they shouldn't have done the tax cuts because you don't know what things are going to be rolling down that we're going to have to pick up. SNAP benefits, for example. There's certainly a plan in the Trump administration to roll most of that to the states. Those are benefits, basic food benefits that came about by a bill passed by Richard Nixon, initiated by Richard Nixon after the poverty tour of Senator Bobby Kennedy and Ernest Hollings and others in Appalachia, and saw the devastatingly poor and malnourished kids that existed in the United States in the 60s. So SNAP came as a result of that. Most of the people who get benefits are either the elderly or their children or they're disabled. And we're talking about eliminating most of those benefits. Now, as a state, unless we want to roll back to the hunger of the 1960s, we're going to have to pick that up. And so planning for that. I think the state could have planned a whole lot more in terms of preparing resiliency for natural disasters. We've seen them, and we're about to, as we head into the hurricane season, and prepare for others. And we really have no significant prep capacity there. I think, finally, the healthcare circumstance, to try to create some stability in the market as best we can on a state level, and to be negotiating with the federal government, because the federal government plan will effectively eliminate 22 million, at a best, 22 million people from coverage. It will vastly increase, not decrease, but vastly increase premiums, and particularly on those who are ill. We'll go back to the circumstances we had before we ever had the ACA, and all the gains that have been made in the last 5 to 6 years will be lost.
Well, let's hope that they'll come up with some better solution. We really appreciate you being with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks very much.
That's it for another edition of News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, Director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.